sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, secret dodgeball superstar, Ailish Forfar. Keep those texts coming, 590, 590. What non-Big Four or Big Five, let's include soccer in there, sport or game, I guess, would you most like to be good at? Like, you can just choose a random thing to be able to dust people at. What are you choosing?
Again, I really think, like, we talked about this during the break, but the among the many reasons why Ailish's picks were horrible, number one is that she's probably already an elite dodgeball player. She's a really good athlete, and anybody who's played dodgeball before knows that that's the whole game. It's like, are you athletic? Can you dodge a ball? Can you dodge a red? Ailish, have you played dodgeball before?
Of course, and I really enjoyed it, but when people are really good at dodgeball, like, I don't have the arm that's going to pick someone off in the corner, you know, like, that I can get from end to end of the gym. Like, yeah. I've played, like, when you've played dodgeball against people that are really good, it's a different level. Like, I'm good, like, elementary school, I was, you know, killing everyone in the gym, course, but different now when you play against someone that's, like, an elite, I don't know, has an elite arm. I don't play dodgeball often. I just thought it would be a fun, like, little thing. I know someone that plays in a dodgeball league in Toronto, and I was like, oh, that's really fun. Like, that would be great to go in there and be good at it and, like, not just be an – I know I'm an athlete, but, like, an average athlete.
Here's my guess, Ailish. You would show up for that league. I'm assuming it's a TSSC league or something like that, and you would dominate because you're a 100%. Professional athlete. And
when
you're
submit-
also – you're also, like, maniacally competitive and would care more than anyone else in the dodgeball gym.
You wasted your dream. You wasted your wish because it's like it was already a reality.
That's,
like,
that's
it was
like
already
me
there.
Saying, I want to be the best at competitive Excel spreadsheet making.
Yes. Yes.
Can I submit one more before we go? What about being elite at ping pong?
I like that one a lot.
Okay. Okay.
That's a sneaky,
see, that would
really
be a great
one.
Skill to have. You go to like someone's cottage and you play ping pong and boom.
But I would choose tennis over that.
Yeah, but ping pong.
But you're
is
thinking
like
the lifestyle. You're thinking like money and fame.
No,
like, I just want to be able to like rip ping pong like more often.
But I would also love, like, you could play tennis your whole life, too. Like, being a part of a tennis club and being all rich and fancy, and you show up and they go, oh, there's that pro tennis player that shows up to be a snob. Oh, what a joy that would be to be able to just like truly deep dive into being a snob. Like, tennis is number one in the snob rankings, right?
So JD's the number, if we spun this instead as athletic skills that we want, JD's number one is money. JD wants money as his number one athletic skill. Race
money,
car driving,
fame,
tennis, golf.
Longevity. Yeah. Money, fame, longevity. Those things are all unbelievably important, because then again, like, I and also these are all practical, these all reach into other areas of life, right? It's like, oh, I'm a professional race car driver. Well, then guess what? Every time you get in a car with me, it's going to be a fun experience. We're going to do the Jeff Gordon, what was that, Pepsi challenge?
You're
going to
go full
thing?
Transporter whenever
you're
in the car with
you. You don't think all those guys are going full transporter all the time? They're living transporter. That's amazing. Golf, again, just leisure activity. It's a leisure activity. People want to be able to just hang out with you and relax and chill. And you're still so rich. I can't believe you guys don't want to take in the lifestyle component of this. It's just like, Ailish just wants to be good at cottage games. That's why we should have just stuck it to, like, games. Games versus pro sports. Because take the money out of it. Yeah, ping pong is an electric answer. So is, I think pool and ping pong, if it was games, would be 1A, 1B for me.
Well, keep your answers coming on the text line, 590, 590. We're going to go to the complete opposite end of the lifestyle that JD's trying to live with these professional sports, and we're going to bring in a professional blogger from Maple Leaf Hot Stove, Leafs analyst and podcaster, Ian Sulik. Ian, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Doing well, man. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I feel like my sport would be beer pong, personally. I don't know if that one counts, but yeah, that'll be my choice.
It always counts, man. It's any situation you can pull that out in. I don't know that there are professional leagues for it yet, but
definitely are.
Yeah, there's got to be, right? Sponsored by beer companies and stuff. Got to be. Well, good, Ian. You ride that. You live it. So the Toronto Maple Leafs continue this road trip starting tonight. They're out west. We don't know how many games they're going to play on this road trip, because that Arizona game now seems to be up in jeopardy. But we talked yesterday a lot about the kind of 4-1 collapse against the Avs. Now, the Avs are a really good team. You're going to lose some games like that by nature of being up 4-1 more than most teams. Were there any points of concern for you in that game and the way in which the Leafs lost it that you know are on your radar for the next few?
I think it's a common trend that we've seen this season. And I know you guys have talked about it ad nauseum, but it's the Jake Muzzin component of this team. He's historically been the player that you use against the other team's best players. And when you're up in the third period, he's going to get more minutes against the other team's best players. And you hope that he can slow the game down, prevent the other team from generating rush chances. And he just hasn't been able to do that this year. How much you want to put the blame on Justin Hall is up to you. Personally, I've always been of the opinion that Jake Muzzin is the one carrying that pairing, and it just hasn't been happening this season. Whether or not that's due to age, injury, I think it's all a factor at this point. So you can look at the numbers and say that when he was out there against McKinnon and Makar and the Avs' top players, the shots and quality chances against were very high. You can look at it throughout this entire season and say it hasn't been the Jake Muzzin we've been seeing this year. I think that's why a lot of Leafs fans are looking at defensemen right now in the trade market, whether it's a Jacob Chychrun or a John Klingberg. There are big names that could be available at the deadline this year, and I totally understand why a lot of Leafs fans are looking at that, because even though this team is succeeding in so many aspects of the game, the one area of weakness that I think you can point to is the fact that their true shutdown pair hasn't been Muzzin Hall this year. It's been Riley Brody, and I think you're looking for a much more stable second pairing if you want to be a true championship contender.
Yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to ask you about bringing you on here, because so much of the discussion so far this year has been, you know, at the margins, like, hey, get an extra depth forward, get a more reliable third pair guy. But on your podcast this week, you were talking about maybe they need a bigger trade. Maybe it needs to be a top six winger. Maybe it needs to be a top four defenseman. You mentioned Chychrun, but are there other targets out there? And I guess more broadly, like, is this, given the cap situation and the draft asset situation, is that realistic for this Leafs team to be able to get a top four D-man on the trade market in the next month and a half?
Yeah, that's the thing. After Jacob Chychrun, the market starts to really thin out. So we'll touch on Chychrun in a minute. Let me just go through some of the other names that are available. I was looking through Trike Saravalli's top 20 trade targets. He seems to be pretty plugged in when it comes to who's available. Ben Chiarot isn't someone that I'd be super interested in. I know that he performed well in the playoffs last year, but he's a left-side defenseman. Personally, I'd trust Jake Muzzin to bounce back more than I'd trust Ben Chiarot to carry a second pair. You've got someone like Calvin DeHaan on Chicago. Don't know how much I trust him. Nick Leddy's a sheltered defenseman on a power play. Maybe you can get some value out of him. Not a huge fan there. Mark Giordano's an interesting name. Definitely someone I'd keep an eye on, because even though he's not having the best year of his career, what's really plagued Seattle this year has been their goaltending. At 5-5, that team has actually done a really good job at driving play, getting more shots and scoring chances than their opponents. So he's someone I'd keep an eye on. I know John Klingberg's a big name. I was looking at his results over the last few years. Throughout his prime, from about 2015 to 2019, he was one of the best defensemen in the league, but he's really dropped off in these last couple of years. It's kind of a Tyson Barrie problem. At 5-on-5, he's not doing too well, but on the power play, he's fantastic. I think with Morgan Rielly having the kind of year he's having, you don't need any help on the power play. What you need is someone who can drive play at 5-on-5. That's not really what John Klingberg does. So I know I brought up Mark Pisick on the radio a few weeks back, and I think I made JD vomit in his mouth, so I don't want to do that again. So we can get back to Jacob Chychrun if you want. I'll put it out to you guys. What are your thoughts on the potential add of Jacob Chychrun and the cost that it would take to add someone like him? Because obviously with the salary, you'd need salary going back the other way. I just want to know where you're at when it comes to your opinion on the player.
Well, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. We don't watch, and I feel like I don't watch enough Jacob Chychrun to know, other than we brought up his plus minus and it was rough. It was rough. And so, like, that was the main discussion about what's he bringing to the table. Is that just because of the situation he's in? Can we get over the plus minus? And you know, maybe that's something that someone like you would have more analysis on. It's like, what does he bring besides that glaring minus? What was it, Blake?
Yeah, it's what is he? He's minus 29 right now.
Yikes.
I think the draw with Chychrun is probably that he's only 23 and he's got three more years left after this one at 4.6 mil. But, like, fitting in 4.6 mil even if that's a good defenseman, is, I don't know, it feels not impossible, Ian, but it feels like you're really tiptoeing with your cap sheet that's already requiring a lot of tiptoeing.
Yeah, and a point on the plus-minus, anytime you're a minutes leader on a team that's truly awful, your plus-minus is going to be terrible. So I don't think that's necessarily an indication on how good Jacob Chychrun is as a player. When you adjust for the context and the minutes that he's been playing, he's actually been one of the better play-driving defensemen in the league over the last year or two. One aspect of his game that I find interesting is that he's a very shot-happy defenseman. He shoots a lot from the left point. And I know the Leafs historically over the last couple of years under Sheldon Keefe, they take the least amount of shots from the point. They really focus on trying to get to the slot, activating down the left wall or down the right wall from their defenseman and trying to complete a pass through the middle of the ice. Those are much more efficient shots. Now, if I'm Jacob Chychrun and I'm looking at the forwards that I have available to me on Arizona, I'm probably shooting the puck a lot too if I scored as many goals as he did. So I can understand that. I'd imagine if he's on a more talented team, if he's playing on Toronto, Tampa, Colorado, Vegas, he's probably passing the puck a little bit more. So that's a factor to keep into account. But the salary is definitely something to consider. Who do you pitch out the other way? I mean, does he take Jake Muzzin's minutes at that point? Do you potentially look at moving on from Jake Muzzin? Do you look at shipping out salary via Alex Kerfoot? I know they've already waived Nick Ritchie to try to make him more of a pleasant trade option to a team who could bury him in the AHL or call him up as needed. JD, I didn't get your thoughts on this situation. I'm curious where you are.
So, to me, it's not even a matter of how good the guy is. The salary cap machinations of it are obviously complicated, but I'm guessing you could figure something out, especially dealing with a franchise like Arizona, right? You ask them to say, take back, I don't know, like, just for argument's sake to make the money work, you ask them to take back Mrazek and you go out and try to find a cheaper backup option. Or you actually ask them to, you say, you know what, we're going to do this deal and it incorporates Muzzin. I don't like the idea of it taking Kerfoot because I think he's been important to this team this year and he's someone who slots in with that top six. And I said yesterday, like, I don't think that Kerfoot can ever really make good on his contract because you pay centers that money, $3.5 million. And if you're going to find a winger that should be able to play with John Tavares and William Nylander, like, or kill penalties, like, I think that you could find that production, that kind of a player for a bit cheaper. But this year, I'm not really messing with it. I think what it really comes down to for me is that the Leafs aren't in a position, in my opinion, where they can afford to just drastically overpay for a highly coveted player that is one of a kind in a market. Like, you're talking about moving Rasmus Sandin, other significant prospect capital, other significant draft pick capital, just to be able to get into the conversation here. And for a team that's already capped out, that has real issues moving forward past the season, like, I don't like doing it because I think that it's a whatever conversation right now to be doing over and over and over again. But I've mentioned it at times, and it's just simply this, is that the Kasha contract, the Mikheyev contract, the Jack Campbell contract, the Jason Spezza contract, these are all things that are going to get harder and harder to replicate if the salary cap stays flat. And so all of a sudden, if you're going to be trying to do this heavy lifting move where you throw in a Jacob Chychrun and you're sacrificing a bunch of pieces that you're going to need to supplement around your roster on the cheap over the next couple of years, I don't know where you really want to put that. And so, no, I'm not in on Chychrun. One, I don't watch enough of them. Two, I'm always worried about going and plucking guys from loser franchises that have just that type of level of losing in a season where you're all in must win. And, like, more importantly than anything else, outside of just some of the realities of the situation, I don't think the Leafs are there. I don't think that they're in that spot. I think that's a move that you make when you're an organization on the come up and you're trying to maximize deals of guys that are on RFA contracts and or cheap and solid contracts, like if you were a Colorado and you have McKinnon on a sweetheart deal, right? Something like that.
And I think you made a lot of really good points there. The idea that you'd need to give up Rasmus Sandin in the trade, that really concerns me because, in my opinion, how long is it before Rasmus Sandin is just as good, if not better, than Jacob Chychrun? I know that he hasn't
proven
it against... Yeah, and that's my point, is that when you look at all the indicators that predict a defenseman's ability to move up the lineup and perform well, we've seen all of them from Rasmus Sandin. He hasn't been given those opportunities yet, but considering how much Jake Muzzin's been struggling this season, I wonder how long it is before Rasmus Sandin starts to get some of those tougher minutes and prove that he can handle them. I don't think he's going to dominate those minutes to the extent that he has on the third pair, but I think he can hold himself above water, and that's more than Muzzin and Hall have proven this season. So, again, you brought up the fact that the Leafs are in salary cap hell right now, and adding a player of Chychrun's stature is going to be really tough to fit. I think moving forward, that's just going to be the reality of the situation when you consider the fact that we have a flat cap, we have a team with a lot of high-paid players. You're going to need to find the next Andre Kasha. You're going to need to find the next Michael Bunting. You're going to need to find the next Jason Spezza is going to be Jason Spezza. This, realistically, he's just going to keep re-signing until he retires at league minimum. But I hear what you're saying. You're just going to need to keep finding these players for under $1 million to fill in at depth places. Alex Kerfoot's a player you brought up who, even though he's providing value this year offensively at $3.5 million, you should be able to get a little bit more. Can I touch on statistically a few performance indicators on Alex Kerfoot that I find really concerning? I saw a chart the other day on Twitter that basically proved everything I've been saying about him this season. I know you're a big fan of the charts, JD. Basically, it showed that even though the shots and scoring chances when Kerfoot's on the ice, when you adjust for factors, they're about break even, the goals for is through the roof. He's one of the best players in the league right now when it comes to impacting goals for, but everything else is about break even. Historically, Alex Kerfoot's never been an elite finisher. He's never been an elite point producer, but all the shooting percentages are super high right now. I understand why everyone's super high on the player. The pucks are going in, and it's fun. The point production's high. All the historical indicators we have right now are that this isn't going to last. And I know that teams typically don't do this, but I'd really look at selling high on Alex Kerfoot right now. His value is never going to be higher than it is right now, and this isn't the player he's going to be moving forward. At $3.5 million, I think you can do more with that cap room. And as we're trying to fit in a player like a Jacob Chychrun or a high-end forward like a Thomas Hertl, moving out Kerfoot's salary and bringing in a valuable asset in return for a bit cheaper, I think that would give you more flexibility in the future to improve your roster. So that's my personal opinion on the player, but as I'm sure, as it happens in life, you guys probably disagree with me here, and I don't blame you.
No, I mean, my biggest question for you is, if they can sell high on someone like a Kerfoot, what is the biggest priority approaching the trade deadline? Is it a top 4D or a top 6 winger? And I know you have opinions on that because you talked about it on your podcast. And if they're able to make this cap space work, what would you be, you know, circling first on the to-do list?
So I'd look at the next month or two and really try to figure out this defense situation. If you could find a way to get Muzzin and another partner working, whether it's Liljegren, whether it's Dermott, it's probably not going to be Dermott, whether it's Rasmus Sandin getting a few more minutes there, if that can solve your defense top four to a certain extent, I would look at adding a forward. But if this top four defense just isn't working out the way we want it to, and that second pairing isn't able to close out games, they're not able to prevent shots and scoring chances against, I think you do need to look at the defense position. The hard part for me is that there's not much available on the market. We brought it up earlier, is that other than Jacob Chychrun, there isn't really a true difference maker available on the market. You can bring in a depth defenseman, but is that going to solve the problem? Probably not. You stick them on the third pair. Who cares about a player playing about 15 or 16 minutes a night? You want someone who's going to be playing 20 minutes plus against the other team's best players. So if you can't acquire that, I do look at some of the best forwards who are available. And there are big names like Thomas Hertl. Claude Giroux is probably going to be available. I was hoping earlier in the season that a name like Philip Forsberg might be available, but it looks like Nashville is going to make the playoffs. Personally, when it comes to adding players, whether it's at the deadline or in the offseason, I tend to take the Vegas approach. I just say add the best player available and make it work somehow. If you have to offload salary on the bottom half of your roster to make it work, you make it happen. So if Thomas Hertl is the best player available, I look at that. If Jacob Chychrun is the best player available and you can make it happen, I'd look at that. I don't like the idea of trading for second-tier players when you're truly going for it. And the Leafs with Auston Matthews in his prime, I think you really do need to go for it right now. So I know that draft capital is thin right now. I know the prospect pool is a little thin, but as long as Auston Matthews is on this roster, I think you truly need to go for it. And best player available is my strategy in the draft, my strategy in the offseason, and come trade deadline, it would be my strategy. So identify the best player available and give up what you need to get him. That would be the way I'd go about it.
We're talking to Ian Tulloch of Maple Leafs Hot Stove. And Ed, if you have any thoughts on this, again, today you get to be the producer, so you can text in 590-590, or you can hit us on the socials, JD Bunkus, Salish Forfar, Blake Murphy. I want to touch back on that Kerfoot thought, because I think it's an interesting one, and I really don't hate it. People have sort of misconstrued my thoughts on Alex Kerfoot. I saw it yesterday, you know, by Blake... replied to somebody on Twitter who had asked a question about it. I didn't really read it, I'll be honest. I saw it and then I looked away because I saw that the general understanding was off. I think Kerfoot is having a good season. He deserves a lot of credit, especially considering the way that he had played as a Maple Leaf so far and the fact that he has, to no fault of his own, been the remaining piece of a blockbuster trade that involved a fan favorite who left town, who's on a really good contract, and who has been very, very good for one of the best teams in hockey for the last couple of years. Like, it's not an easy position to be in. He's making 3.5, which to me, contextually, is too much money for what he's doing. He's playing with elite players in a very, very team-friendly situation, and he's paid to be a centerman. And since he's not a centerman, you can't afford to pay a winger $3.5 million. The Leafs have already done this. They did that experiment with Kasperi Kapanen. They tried it with Andreas Janssen. They moved those guys out because it does not work. It does not fit with the current construct of this team. And that's how I feel about Kerfoot, too. My counter would be, though, that this sometimes when we're having these conversations, and I'm guilty of it too, we treat it like an NHL video game where you're trying to match and make a trade for a slight upgrade and you're trying to do this thing where you're tinkering and you're going, well, could you find this production here and could you sell high and could you get an asset back? And I just think that it's really, really difficult to do things like that. And when you are in an all-in season like the Leafs are, there is a little bit of don't mess with happy with me. Is okay, Kerfoot might regress. Do I think Kerfoot is the player that he's showing to be so far this season with all the even strength scoring and just basically not a ton of mistakes, blah, 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 go on down the line? No, I think there's probably more regression to come than for him to maintain this. But I also think that he deserves credit for the play, and I'm not making a move where I'm removing him to get an asset back or cap back for a potential move down the line. The only way that he is moving off the roster, if I'm the Leafs, is if I'm getting a surefire bona fide piece that is coming back that I know is going to be an upgrade on that player, or at least I feel very, very confident is going to be an upgrade on that player. You said it. You're all in, right? You're all in with Austin Matthews. That has to just also include the potential for a drawback. It can't just be looked at as, well, what it is on paper. So that's just where I would be at with it.
And that's the same argument as to why you hold on to a JVR, even though he's expiring a few years back, because you can't make a move that decreases your chances of winning. You need to be constantly trying to improve your team. So I think that's a very fair point. My one counter to Kerfoot is that, what do you think the Kerfoot-Tavares-Nylander combination is at 5-on-5 this year in terms of their shot share at 5-on-5? I'd imagine that a Tavares-Nylander combination should be dominating play at 5-on-5. Yep. When you look at their numbers with Kerfoot this year, they're below 50% in terms of shot share. And that just, to me, that can't happen. That needs to be a line that is absolutely dominating play at 5-on-5. I know Kerfoot's making some skilled plays off the rush, and that tends to increase your shooting percentage to a certain extent, but not to the extent that it's at right now. So I think it's a bit of smoke and mirrors what we're seeing right now in terms of the actual goals for. I think that is going to cool off. I think anytime shooting percentages fluctuate, whether it's on the really high or low end of the spectrum, it tends to really skew our perceptions on a player. And that's why I tend to just focus on shots and scoring chances, because to me, the rest is just noise. Everything else will eventually regress closer to the mean. But if you focus on the things that are truly repeatable and sustainable, that's where you get a better read on a player. And historically this season, Alex Kerfoot just hasn't been impacting play at 5-on-5 really well. So with that $3.5 million price tag, I would be looking to maximize that asset. But like you said, I'm not just doing it to add draft capital. I'm not just doing it to make my prospect pool more intriguing. I need to do it as a part of a bigger deal to make my team better. I know you said we can't just treat this like it's NHL 22 and, you know, just, oh, well, whatever. This is going to improve our team as a whole. You know, we won the trade in terms of we got 5-star return. They got a 4-star return. But the way that Vegas looks at adding players, they do it in NHL 22 for, hey, we can't possibly add Alex Pietrangelo. Well, sure we can. We can't possibly add Jack Eichel. Well, sure we can. We'll make room. I think if you're the Leafs, you can look at adding a bigger name to this roster, and the player that would be going back the other way would be an Alex Kerfoot. So that's the way I'd look at making it happen. But I hear what you're saying, JD. You don't just trade Alex Kerfoot for the sake of trading him. But if you're looking for an asset that makes sense going out the other way as a part of a bigger deal, I think Alex Kerfoot makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I think that you make a really strong case, and I don't hate it. Let's just put it that way. And I will say this, too, is welcome, because I believe I did your podcast 2 years ago saying that I would trade Alex Kerfoot in year one of his contract with the Toronto Maple Leafs, outlining a lot of these reasons. So it only took you a year and a half to get here. Always good, buddy. This was great. I really enjoyed the perspective today. Ian Tulloch, Leafs analyst and podcaster for Maple Leafs Hot Stove. We'll talk to you soon, pal.
Hey, no worries. I remember getting ratioed for not liking the idea of trading Nazem Kadri 2 years ago, so I feel a bit vindicated now that he's top
That's
five in scoring. But thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
See you, bud. I like that. I think that's a really good take. That's a really good it's a really great contrarian look at Alex Kerfoot right now, because if you look at the numbers that I care about, 5-on-5, he's been awesome. And if you look at a little bit closer, maybe those numbers aren't as good as we think. And I will say this, is that, like, I know I joke a lot about analytics and how I don't care for them. I do care about them. I just care about them in a way that is, I want to have it as a piece of the picture, not as the entire picture. And that is one where I would say that's an eye-popping statistic for me, that if your shot share is not above 50% and you have, how much money is that on that line? That's 11 with Tavares.
It's about
that's 7. That's what I mean. That's over $20 million on a line. It better have a 50% shot share plus. I'm sorry, it does. And if it isn't, I'm not pointing the blame primarily at the centerman who was probably going to make Team Canada or the winger who's having a career season. That's just not where I'm going to go first.
Yeah, a couple of people in the text line have asked a question that is something that's on my mind, and we can talk to Christopher Stieg later at 9 o'clock about it, is what are your thoughts on adding someone like an Evander Kane, who just got bought out of his contract from San Jose Sharks, somebody that is a 30-goal scorer, fights worth upwards of $7 million, and would be available on like a league minimum deal for 1 year. A lot of questions about this are, is it worth it? You know, he's got a lot of off-ice drama, to say the least, but would he be someone that the Leafs are interested in? And yesterday, there were discussions floating around that they're at least interested in exploring the idea. So I think we could talk
Where
a little bit more about
from?
That. The Toronto Sun.
Yeah, Michael Tracos.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but yeah. I just don't buy it.
They've put too high a premium on culture
yeah,
and stuff to do that.
Kyle, okay, I'm sorry. I don't buy this. I don't buy this report. I'm sorry to Michael, but I just don't. Kyle Dubas, I know they had the thing with the goaltending coach the last couple of years. There was a guy that they brought in that had a pretty spotty track record. But it really, if I'm remembering this correctly, don't hold me to it. Maybe I shouldn't have even brought it up. It was more about the guy's political leanings than it was to actually to do anything with his actual criminal record or things that he had. Bringing in Evander Kane is in direct conflict with so much mm-hmm. of the messaging that the Toronto Maple Leafs have pushed out over the last couple of years. And yes, do I think that a hockey team's primary function should be hockey? And yeah, I do. I actually do. I think that they're a sports team, and that asking them to be more than that is, well, that's good that you want to be a good corporate citizen, but I also don't care about it nearly as much as I do the results of the team. I also don't think, I think Evander Kane is a lose in every single way. Like, every single way you mm-hmm. cut it up, that this is a losing move. He is unequivocally the least popular player in the NHL. Like, it's not even a, oh, and there could be, no, it's him by a factor of 10 billion. He's the only guy in a league full of people who never want to make a peep about bad actors. The only guy that players will openly say,
hell to the no do I want to be around that dude. And it hasn't just been at one stop. It wasn't like, hey, this guy's had a bad run in San Jose. Mm-hmm. It was, hey, this is the guy that Dustin Byfuglien is throwing his clothes into the shower and needs to get out of Winnipeg because all of his teammates hate him. This is the guy that in Buffalo, they couldn't wait for him to get the hell out of town. And now this is a guy in San Jose that despite having really good numbers, all of his teammates looked at him and went, please don't bring him back. We're begging you not to bring this guy back. So to put him in the Leafs locker room, into that dressing room, now, in a year where you are trying to win, and you have actual team chemistry, and you have it where it's actually pretty fragile. Let's just admit this. The Leafs are going into a playoff series. Who thinks that they're just going to be powerful mentally or that things can't derail them? That you're going to have that guy in there? It's one of the worst Leafs takes I've ever heard. I'll just put it that way. It is one of the least attractive, most outrageous, nonsensical Leafs arguments I've ever heard, or fake additions. I can't even think of one that comes close.
Yeah, I just want to make it very clear that I'm completely on board with your takes. It was just something floating around, and I think it would be
a
truly despicable move. I think a lot of people would probably lose their support for the Toronto Maple Leafs if they were to go that way. Hopefully that isn't something that they're seriously considering, and maybe that was just, you know, tiny little rumors floating around. But yeah, it would be a completely awful move, in my opinion.
But I don't mind having the discussion. I think that's sports discussion.
No, no, like, for sure. I didn't want it to be something that it sounded like I suggested. I definitely don't suggest that. Do not do that.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Antonio Brown. It's the same thing. Antonio Brown. Oh, wow. Look at Tampa Bay go. They got Antonio Brown for nothing. This is so great. That Antonio Brown for nothing. You got this. Look at it go. It's working so well. And then all of a sudden, you've got a shirtless player in the end zone doing podcasts, ripping on Tom Brady, right? It's like, I'm not doing that. And that's one thing when you're Tom Brady and you got 6 Super Bowl rings and you can kind of go, Let's take a shot. I got 6 Super Bowl rings. It's another thing when you're the Toronto Maple Leafs and you have 0 Super Bowl rings and you don't have Tom Brady and you don't have that equity.
Yeah, the Leafs, the same number of Super Bowl rings as they have Stanley Cup rings the last little while. It's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
I'm going to bring us back to the topic we've been discussing on the text line. Keep those texts coming in at 590-590. Mm. When Ailish asked us what kind of – we took this a couple different ways. Which professional sport or which, I guess, social parlor game, kind of bar game kind of thing would you most like to be good at? I said – billiards on the bar side, and JD has leaned toward the more lucrative of options.
I just need to know what the game is.
I know. So I'm just going to tee this up. Here's your something to chew on. I did the research at our last break. Yeah. RoboCop or Coyo, who is considered the money game king of billiards. 13 career top 10 finishes in the money. 3 number one finishes in the money, 17 major titles in the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Has been active for 20 years.
Wow.
Estimated career earnings of $1.8 million. Like, arguably the best billiards player of all time. 20 years active, $1.8
million. No, that can't be real.
This is, I did the digging.
$1.8 million.
Yeah, it's American, but that doesn't do a lot for us here. That's from azbillions.com, which is the most thorough earnings tracking site that I could come with, and they had his entire Hall of Fame bio there.
Blake, I got to tell you, I thought this was going the complete opposite way. When you were setting it up, I was expecting him to be like career earnings $180 million. And I was going to go, that makes sense to me. My brain is it's in shambles. I'm completely shattered by this.
Something
Ailish, did you have which way were you leaning when he was setting that up?
Like, I've never once thought about the career earnings of a guy like that, but
RoboCop.
I thought more than
years?
That probably.
Yeah,
20 years.
As the number one Hall of Famer of it too, like
The money game king and one of the most decorated billiards players of all time over his career, $90,000 a year. I wonder if he gets benefits with that salary.
Still more than professional women's hockey player.
But disc golf, which I love, right? And is on the rise. It's hot, baby. It's hot in the streets. They have millionaires. They have guys who have million-dollar contracts in disc golf. Disc golf compared to billiards. You know, there's no disc golf driving range. Like, there's no – what do we – how is that possible? That's just what's a Princess Bride? Inconceivable. That's how I feel right now. Completely broken. Really tough look for Poole. Poole, you got to figure it out. You got to figure something out, Poole. I had more respect for you, and now my Poole respect has gone down. So they're all out there just playing for $20 on the pool table. Like, this is just a guy who his entire life has been playing for $20 over 20 years and never lost, and he's made $1.8 million. That's what you do. Oh, my God. The tatters.
So chew on that. We got to take a break. Keep the text coming, 590.
I don't think I can do the show anymore.
Let us know, would you rather be RoboCop on the billiard side, or would you rather be Paul Macbeth, who's already made $600,000 in the disc golf world?
Yeah.
Keep those texts coming in. We'll take some more of those after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. It's Text Line Tuesday. Send us your text, 590-590. Our initial conversation topic was, what sport would you want to play and be dominant at that isn't one of the main North American sports? We've had tons of texts in the text line regarding your selections. I got to say, there's a lot of people saying ping pong. That one's coming up. Matt from Uxbridge, he's on it. We got a golfer, Sean from Pickering, saying, definitely golfing for me to be super rich and play at amazing courses, but also be elite at tic-tac-toe.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Sean Rondo? Rondo's like, Connect Four.
By the way, I love how the two of you were like, I didn't choose this to get rich. And then the second we would all choose to do this, if I was like, hey, guys, I'll give you $45 if you'll do an ad read from my new golf company, you both would be like, Of course, JD. Of course I would. Of course I'll take that money.
This one's kind of for you here, JD. Brody from Scotia says, if we go Ailish's route of sports to dominate in Toronto, frisbee golf. That one is something you're already dominating in Toronto. Are you not?
I wish I was. I'm a choker. Oh. That's the thing. I'm a disc golf choker. I actually have gotten pretty decent at it. I think I throw it too hard. I wish there was like a swing coach for disc golf that you could actually work with, because I think I'm ripping the disc too hard with my arms and not enough with my body. Nobody cares about this, but I will say that it's one of the most infuriating things because I love it. It's so fun. We have incredible courses here in Toronto. It's totally just welcoming to everybody. It's one where you can bring someone out for the first time, and if they have just any level of athleticism at all, or even it's just like they can come out for a walk. It doesn't have to be that competitive. You can play competitively, you can play for fun, great time, free, accessible, all those things. Outdoors right now in a pandemic where it's been tough to do social activities, that's been a great one. But I am such a choker. It is unbelievable. Like, I might be the biggest choker who ever lived. That's like on the table. I'm there. It's me. It might be me.
So I have two follow-up questions on that, JD. The first is, are you basically trying to tell us that you're too strong to be a good disc golfer? Oh,
yeah, I get it. You're jacked.
Too far.
No,
I don't know. No. See, I have some problem right in here along the bicep.
So the best women's player
there.
I'm obviously too strong, but yes, the best women's player is a woman named Paige Pierce, and she is a tiny little thing, and she can rip it because it's all core. The entire sport is core, and I wish I could go out with someone that was like, hey, I'm actually going to work with you over a couple of holes and try to get this right, because people give you tips. And then you take a tip or you watch a YouTube video and it's one of those things, and then you're just screwed up and then you want to get back to, you know, shooting lower, and that requires you kind of regressing from a form standpoint. So that's where I'm kind of stuck. I've kind of plateaued in my disc golf game is where I'm at with this.
Yeah, I do wonder if maybe you need to switch from, and this is hard as we're all trying to build home gyms once again, but a switch from dumbbells to steel clubs for some of your exercises.
Yeah,
to improve that rotational strength. My other question was just like the person in Scotia, Brody in Scotia, referred to it as frisbee golf. Is that like a faux pas?
Well, that's like Ailish calling it ping pong instead of table tennis, where she wants to be pro. Like, first thing is Ailish showing up at the table tennis convention, calling it ping pong, and they're like, get out of here, you casual. I don't really care. I will say this, is that frisbee golf definitely sounds lamer than disc golf. Disc golf has a way better sound to it, but also the way that I think it's perceived is still more in the frisbee golf. You know, like, stop trying to cool it up. It sounds like frisbee golf. I'm still, as much as I love it and stand by it and truly believe that it's one of the best sports I've ever played in my entire life, and that includes actual ball golf, it's still embarrassing to tell people. Like, if I go on a date with someone and they're like, what'd you do this week? And I'm like, I played disc golf. They're like, what'd you do? I'm like, nothing. You know, I burnt down an orphanage. I'd rather be that guy than admit to playing disc golf sometimes. Anyways, what's next?
Here's a couple extras here.
I love seeing Blake's face when I say stuff like that.
I really agree with Graham from Guelph, who said, being an elite surfer would be awesome. Spending all day out in the sand and sun and having that lifestyle and looks as great. Totally agree, Graham.
Graham.
It's a great answer.
Great answer, except for one thing. Sharks are out there. That, like, no, there's that one girl who has one arm who's a professional surfer. You know who I'm talking about. It can happen, all right? If it happened to her, it can happen to you and T. And so, like, I'm just – that's something.
JD, you got to grow the hair out here. Yeah, let's all agree on surfing. JD, you got to grow the hair out so me and you can have a little point break thing going with the dark hair, light hair dynamic.
Yeah.
And then what is the women's surfing movie?
Oh no. Oh,
Soul Deep Surfer.
Blue. No.
Is it not Soul Surfer where she loses her arm?
No, oh, I was thinking more of like a Blue Crush.
I knew it was the one I was thinking of.
Yes, Blue Crush.
That's where Ailish can come in. Unless you want to do the more. I didn't want to chop your arm off in the hypothetical here.
No, I mean, it's
here,
kind
Ailish.
Of a cool story.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know. I think Kelly Slater, that's an all-time cool person that you would want to be. So, yeah. I think that's a great answer. You're just cool for life, too. Anywhere you go. You don't even need to be rich in this scenario. You're just so cool that you get into everything. And even up against the rich people, you're still the draw at the party, right? You're a surfer.
Well, yeah, because the rich people are trying to get rich so that they can have enough leisure time and property so that they can learn to surf. And you're the guy who's like, no, I got the money and the property
all-time
from surfing.
Cool move.
I also feel like I've never, like, looked through ex-surfers. I assume you get the tan and abs for life. Like, you get grandfathered the tan and the abs here.
Yeah.
I tried surfing once when I was in Indonesia, and it is difficult.
Yeah.
Super difficult. Like, and they weren't even real waves, basically. It was just, like, getting up and standing up. And I was like, how do you even tackle a 3-foot wave? Like, this is difficult. It was more just for, like, the experience of being there to try it. Here's one that I think you guys will agree on. Matt from Innisfil. Skateboarding would be mine. All my friends growing up could do it. I could not. We talked about this earlier about...
That's a sad text, though.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I agree. Like, I wanted to be a skateboarder and I couldn't do it.
Yeah, listen, skateboarder is, I think, a great choice. It's a really good one. It's a very, very cool one. I would just say that surfer is the, like, it's like the step up. It's like, I couldn't remember. I don't know any of the Pokemons, but I know they evolve. But I know, I was like, what does Pikachu turn into? Come on, you guys have to know this. Raichu, says Vic.
Okay, I'm not a Pokemon guy.
I'm surprised Ailish doesn't know. That's like in your wheelhouse age wise. So the
I know who Pikachu is. I don't know the evolution. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I do now. Victor, it's Raichu. I say that? Yeah, Raichu. And so Raichu, that's the surfer. And Pikachu is the skateboarder. Where, do I think it's more practical? Do I think that there's a better thing? For sure. But going out and having that lifestyle and knowing that. Think about where you have to live, too, to be a pro surfer. And you're right. I have done it a few times. It's very hard. It's one of those things, though, where you see pretty quick gains. And I'm surprised, too. Again, that maybe we give you too much credit for being a pro athlete. I think we need to stop doing that. You're like, I couldn't do this, and I sucked at dodgeball, and I do that, and I'm like, you know, maybe you're just good at hockey. Maybe it's not maybe it doesn't translate to other things.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. So I think the skateboarding versus surfer thing is an interesting one because the way that this one was framed from, sorry, who was it in Innisfil?
Joe.
It was.
Who knows? Next.
Joe. Anyway.
Matt.
Yeah. Oh, Matt and his, so yeah. He wants to get to a level other people are already on in a sport that a lot of people can do at like an average level versus surfing, which is like, oh, so few people can do this and so few people are elite at this. So it's an interesting like shift in perspective of like, do you want to do something that is going to come up more often and you can be good at, or like something rare like surfing? I'd lean towards surfing. But maybe that's just because, like, I've skateboarded before and it doesn't seem as shiny as surfing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, two quick ones before we take a break. Marco says a bullfighter.
No.
No, thank you.
Yeah, not sure about that one, Marco.
Some of you guys like out live. There with your ideas, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what you guys do for a living. Like, are you, you're never allowed
hopefully
to speak
not
at
bullfight.
Any meetings, obviously, Marco. Like, bullfighting, no. Like,
and,
hey, you want to get gouged by a bull for no money? Sound good? And then have to potentially kill the bull? No. Awful idea, Marco.
Cameron says, clearly it's poker.
It's a good one, but no, it's not clearly it's
one.
Poker.
But it's also, does poker clearly. Count as a sport?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it does.
We counted. We counted darts.
Yeah, but there's a physical component to darts. There's no physical component to poker.
Buddy, splashing the pot and throwing a dart is like the same level of
athleticism.
You're
doing the KGB.
Yeah,
drop the
well, would you consider would you consider esports a sport? It's technically
that's where I draw the line,
It has its
esports.
Own classification as esports.
Yes, exactly.
I would love to be really good at poker. I like poker a lot. I just don't know if it qualifies here because there's no...
No, you're right. I'm not qualifying it. I'm not qualifying poker. I'm sorry. I know we put it on sports TV channels, but you're right. Like, at least a dart doesn't require hand-eye coordination. Like, it requires fine motor skills. Poker is not that at all. Like, you don't need to
be... It's a game.
Yeah, it's a game. And also, it's actually a really poor choice just in terms of, like, the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You're living in casino. Have you guys ever played poker? Like, this is the answer of someone who's never actually been in a big poker tournament, because being in a big, long poker tournament, that's the whole game.
You?
Yeah. And poker is really just a sport where all it is, or a sport, or a game, where 99% of it is just patience, is who is the most patient person. And that it's like, you know, okay, great. You can wait. You're the best at waiting. Yay. Sounds horrible. You got to pee in a bag. Like, it's not a good scene. That's not a good scene. No, I'm out on this one.
Yeah, there's a reason they call the movie Rounders, right? And it's not a compliment about the lifestyle. It's you got to sit there and what is it he tells Joey Kanish? He's got a flat ass or something like that from sitting at the table so long.
Yeah, no.
We got to take a break, but keep those coming. 590. Let us know what you'd like to be really good at, which secretly also tells on yourself of. Because it means you're not good at that thing that you're suggesting. So whoever said the poker thing, if you'd like to come to my next poker game, you just send your contact info. You can always use more fish.
Absolutely robbed every poker tournament.
Can always use more fish.